But though they're best friends, they're so close, they feel more like brothers. Like they get mad at each other. And like you said, the actors and the characters themselves really feel like they know each other. This movie is like one of my best friends, or my best friend growing up, Sean. Him and I like love this movie just because we were Miguel and Tulio, so we always will quip these one-liners back. And really, I think that's why I like this movie so much, is not necessarily the story of like them going to El Dorado, blah blah blah, but just there's funny moments between the two of them.
Welcome to the Movie Dads Podcast with your hosts Howie and Kyle.
Welcome back to the Movie Dads Podcast. We're your hosts. I'm Howie.
I'm Kyle.
That is Kyle, and we are confounded that we are all the way up to episode number 36 of the Movie Dads Podcast. I know. We're getting close to 50 now. Like, it's getting up there.
We are literally right around the corner from 100. This is wild.
That's a long ways away, but... Probably 2025 before that number goes around.
Well, to be fair, when we did one, I was like, oh, this was fun. Like, this will last probably 10, maybe 5 days. But here we are. We're growing. We've got followers.
36 episodes.
Socials.
Yeah.
We got comments all sorts from strangers.
Random shit. We're hot shit on TikTok right now.
Dude, we're amongst the movement, the youths. We are a part of the movement. I had to download TikTok recently because I don't have it, and I haven't had it. I'm always like one social media behind. Like, I was super late to Facebook. I was super late to Snapchat. I was super late to Instagram. So,
same.
Yeah. But I jumped on, and I'm enjoying it. That's where we get a lot of our – communication.
We get a lot of people like that. Yeah, a lot of likes, a lot of people leaving comments, things like that. There's a lot more interaction on TikTok than there is anything. We got videos out there with, you know, 100 likes or whatever. Anyway, we get new followers every day on TikTok. Yeah,
hear me out. Like, this fan base, they either hate what I say, they hate my takes, or they love them. And I
There's
love
no
them.
In between. That's,
in the world of wrestling, you either want to be a super hot baby face, good guy, or a super hot heel, bad guy. Like, you got to be, you can't be in the middle. So I love it. We argued about Eternal Sunshine of a Spotless Mind with someone. Some fool out there said that was Jim Carrey's greatest movie. Get out. You freaking overrated snooze fest of a movie. And then some guy got upset with you. What were they, Matt? What were they? Someone was not happy with what you had said.
I'm pretty sure it had to do with Forrest Gump, but.
Oh shit. That's exactly what it was. Because you had the audacity to say that Forrest Gump was not
a good the best movie of 1994. Was not the best movie of 1994.
I don't think that's how you worded it, though.
Which you actually agree with. So,
well, Shawshank is the best movie of all time.
There you go.
Anyway,
episode 36 of the Movie Dads Podcast. The I Can't Believe You Haven't Seen It. We are finally doing the episode we've talked about for at least 9 months. The 2000 Let's animated go. Adventure musical, The Road to El Dorado.
El Dorado. El Dorado. Let's go, Elton John.
Gonna be a lot of Rushing that in this it. Episode, isn't there? You singing songs.
Already know it. You were the one that picked one of our lists, so that's
I your did. Fault. It was a little on brand. Hey, gotta stick with it. So but if you're watching us on YouTube, please give us that like and subscribe. Leave us a comment. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you don't like. Click the bell. Make sure you're following, obviously, on YouTube. And then if you're not watching us on YouTube, hopefully that you are listening to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, Podcast Index. And you're following us as well to get notifications when new episodes drop, which we are trying to be more consistent about making sure there's one out every weekend. Every weekend we can do it. Anyway, you can also find us on social media at Movie Dads Pod on Instagram, Facebook, and the new hotness is TikTok.
Got me. Bitch. Got me. Yeah, when Howie says so we can consistently be every weekend, that was a little bit of a dig. And
not at all.
I'll take it. So as you probably haven't realized on this show, I'm a bit of a diva when it comes to stuff. So I don't know if it's because I'm a Californian or the youngest child of three boys or what, but I have no shame in my game.
Could be all those things. Anyway, we're movie dads and we have movie kids. This week, more of the norm, right? Since we've last recorded, basketball with Dez, Reagan with her show choir. She's off this week, which is wonderful. Super Bowl. I mean, at least they recognize that there's which an important wonderful. Football game on this weekend. Mm. But Reagan and I on Saturday night, she said, I would like to watch a movie. Would you like to watch a movie? And I said, yes. And she goes,
you guys talk so proper.
No. Well, sometimes she does say, like to watch she does say, watch she does say things to me like, do you have any Kleenex? And I'll be like, yeah, there's a box on my desk. And she's like, oh, thank you. Good chap. And then she'll walk away. And I'm like, what are you weird?
Fucking hilarious.
She's a weirdo. But we watched the greatest movie of all time on Saturday night.
Shawshank Redemption.
We watched the Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, shit. Nice.
I said it was time. She'd been asking forever. And of course, like my biggest fear was like, is my daughter going to not like this movie?
Yeah. She gotta she's wait till she's it. Old enough oh. to be able to understand.
To comprehend. And it yeah. wasn't. And she watched it and I'm watching her. You know, like when you show a movie to somebody, then you really want them to like it. And you're like. Watching them during parts like I really watched her like when Brooks got out of prison mm-hmm. and that whole scene where he's trying to acclimate to normal yeah, life yep, and yep, yep. And as soon as she realized he'd hanged himself, she was just crying.
Shook
and
us. I'm like,
yeah. And then or like when Warden Norton puts his finger through the poster and realizes that Andy escaped. Like you know.
Gosh, that talk about some of the there are a lot of best things about being a dad or a parent. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I what you are describing is like something I never really thought about when I was becoming a parent is when you get to show your kids where they're old enough to understand mm-hmm. the nerdy stuff that you like. And when they like it, it's like, it just melts your heart, makes you feel good. So,
well, it's very similar to last week when I was in Dez and I watched Jurassic Park.
Yep.
Same kind of thing. I was watching how he reacted to certain scenes because they're amazing movies, both of them, right? But then we get to the end, and Red's walking down the beach, and him and Andy, you know, embrace. And I just look over at her, and she goes, that is definitely one of my favorite movies now. And I'm like,
nice. Fuck yeah. I love crushing it.
I loved it. But
put that tally on the.
I've been waiting to tell that story since last weekend. I've been like, oh, I can't wait to tell that on the podcast.
That's fucking great. You just mm-hmm. experienced the greatest movie of all time with your kid for the first time. That's fucking awesome. Right. Love that. Mm-hmm. Love that. Nothing is profound in our week. We did a trip to the zoo, actually, with all Ooh. Three kids. First time, I think, all five of us had gone.
Okay.
And it was a little bit colder, so we were really just doing the indoor stuff. And it's been a long time since I've been to the zoo where, like, we didn't have any major issues or, like, during Christmas time, for example, we would try to go do fun stuff with all the kids and it would turn into like kids would be freaking out or yelling or fighting. And it was just like, we're trying to do something fun and everyone's having a bad time. This zoo trip was opposite. It was great. Like we just had a great time. The kids were losing their minds. I think it was because it was cold. There was like nobody at the zoo. So we did at the Omaha Zoo, which is has been ranked the number one zoo in the world multiple years over and over. Mm-hmm. It has a massive desert dome with a underground like swamp cave area. And we got to do both with no people around. It was just us walking through. It was so cool. Yeah. So
did you go in the jungle?
We did go in the jungle. And
what time of day were you there?
Like late afternoon. It was like we were like an hour from close.
Okay.
Why
so
you ask?
So I used to work a 4-on-4-off schedule when Reagan was little. Right? Mm-hmm. Like I'd work 4 10-hour days and then I'd have 4 days off. 14-hour days. What am I talking about? So on my days off, we'd go to the zoo. Like, and we'd always go in the wintertime because there was never anybody there. But like, mm-hmm. you know, the sun goes down early. And yeah. we would always save the jungle for last. And we'd go right before closing. And we'd walk around the bottom where you can walk on the ground floor. And the bats are all out.
Oh,
and they will dive at you.
Yes.
It's crazy if you've never gone right before close.
I think they rearranged it a bit so that the bats don't do that because like they've really clustered in an area. It's hard to explain, but number one, I like to relate to Batman or feel like I am related to Batman because I have an internal fear of bats. It is, they are the most disgusting things. If you've ever seen Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls, when bats are like, and he's just freaking out, that is me. There was a time we were at the zoo, probably 10 years ago, and we were on the ground floor of the jungle walking through. Everybody knows I'm like, bats just fucking gross me out. They weird me out. My wife makes fun of me for it. I got chased by a tiny little bird when I was like in high school and it chased me basically around the whole neighborhood and it really traumatized me. So anyways, so we're walking through this cave. I think I'm clear from the bats because we've passed them and we're going down an underground cave. I look up and there is a bat in the underground cave waiting for me. And I thought, yeah, he's going to sit there and not move and like I'll just sneak by. Nope. Full on attacked me, came at me, just got his wings around me and literally ruined me. So, fuck that. Fuck the bats. No, thank you. They are disgusting. Love Batman, hate bats, just like Bruce Wayne. So literally the whole time we were there, I was doing was scoping out those little fucking rodents. So, but the kids had fun. And it was kind of weird because it was like kind of freezing outside, but then you go inside to like the jungle and it's like a million degrees and humid. So right. We had like
pull layers
sweatshirts
off.
And jackets. Yep. And it was, that was a little bit of a much, but, had a great time. The kids were just losing their mind. There's a white alligator there. It's not an albino. That is like the famous animal in the zoo. So, but they loved it. They had a great time. We had a great time. And that's my kind of dad story for the week.
That's nice. I do have to ask, is there an update from last week? Is Cal walking?
He, at that point, had I mentioned if he had taken any steps yet?
Can you talk about it every time like you'd let go of him, he'd just drop.
Yes. So he officially took his first jaunt solo dolo. He took, golf clap. He took about 5 or 6 steps.
Wonderful.
Then he did go down and it was just the one time. Both my wife and I were there with him. So it was cool. We got to, like, awesome. We were there for the moment. All three of our kids, we've happened to be together when it happened.
Good.
But he hasn't like just taken off and now he's walking. He did that the one time. We fucking lost our minds. Like we were at a football game and now he's back to just shuffling around everything. So holding on to stuff and trying to make his way into different places. So,
excellent.
But that takes us to our next segment, my most excited segment. This is our 6 to midnight. This is what gets us up in the morning. The nerdy things that we're interested, new video games, new movie trailers, stuff that we're just nerding out about this week. And I know you've got a ton of news from some things that dropped yesterday. We'll save you for second. For me, the nerdy things, I've been nerding out about kind of two things. So one, and I've talked about this multiple times, I get on Batman the Animated Series kicks all the time. So mm-hmm. I've been on that the last couple of weeks. I knew how many episodes there were, but have really been diving in with the ones that I haven't watched as much. So basically every morning when the kids and I get up, we've been putting Batman the Animated Series on. And it is the best Batman like content. It's like the longest Batman comic book. That's like the greatest comic ever. It's such a good series. I cannot stress enough how essential it is to Batman and its lore and everything that we really see Batman as in current, like things that we love about him is really a lot from that series is what made that kind of solidified. So anyways, there is a there's a nerdy thing that I didn't realize. There's a huge Blade Runner kind of connection in Batman the Animated Series. There's three episodes that it's literally Blade Runner. There is basically a company that creates AI and essentially replicants, robots. They got the, I forget what his name was, his role, but the toy maker from the movie mm-hmm. Blade Runner. So like the guy who talks with the girl and helps them out. He's the one who actually created the robot for the rich company. They got that guy to voice essentially the same character for this company. He is like the brain behind creating these AI replicants. He's a good guy. He's not a bad guy. Like he creates these things with the thought of them being good and they end up turning and becoming like Terminators. But it's super cool because they did two episodes that was that guy basically voicing his own character and them doing kind of a Blade Runner replicant thing. And then there's another episode where they follow back to it where Batman, there's two Batmans out there. And we don't know what's going on. And then you find out one of them is a replicant. It's a fucking replicant Batman. And the replicant Batman doesn't know he's a replicant. So like halfway through the episode, he finds out like, my mind's been stuck in this robot's body. Like he goes mm-hmm. to the Blade Runner actors to help him out. Get my mind, put it back in my body. And he's like, your mind is not in a robot body. Like you are a robot. Those are all memories that we put in there. And it's just cool. Super cool about kind of nerdy. Blade Runner, you know I've got a nerd like 6 to midnight about that movie. So it's just cool that there's episodes that are literally directly tied to it. So that, and then WrestleMania season is here, baby. WWE. I know you don't care about it. I don't watch all the time, but I do watch WrestleMania every year. There's a new WWE game that's dropping in like 3 weeks from it too that just looks like, I don't know if you ever played SmackDown, Here Comes the Pain, or any of the original SmackDown games.
I played I don't remember which one it was for Nintendo 64.
Probably No Mercy.
I think it was like WCW versus NWO, and that was that was like the best wrestling game ever made.
Fucking classic. It's so fucking good. And that's like that game and a couple of those N64s, they've really tried to like mirror what was so good about them. I freaking loved SmackDown video games, like Just Bring It, all those from back in the day on PlayStation. Fucking nerded out about them and was a huge wrestling fan in junior high and a little bit in high school. So anyways,
a little bit today.
Well, and today, like I nerd out just about the pay-per-views, and I usually watch one every couple of months. And then obviously WrestleMania and Royal Rumble are the two things that are interesting to me. The guy we wanted to play, Johnny Cage, Mr. Cody Rhodes, the son of American Dream Dusty Rhodes, is official tonight. He won the Royal Rumble a couple of weeks ago, and he has chose Roman Reigns as who is the current champion, who he fought and lost to in WrestleMania last year. Anyways, so WrestleMania is coming up. The new WWE game's coming out. It looks freaking great. The new game has what's called like 40 years of WrestleMania. So you can literally go and play all of like the classic, like Hulk Hogan versus Ultimate Warrior and Stone Cold versus Bret Hart. like all these cool classics that you should know about, even if you didn't watch wrestling, you probably know who, all of the people I'm talking about, that you get to go and relive those days. So I'm juiced for that. I'm excited. Don't judge me. I need to stop talking about Batman the Animated Series, damn it. What do you got?
Okay, share with me your world. There was a ton of Disney-related news this week because Disney had an investors call and basically wanted to say, okay, this is what we've got going on. And there was a ton of announcements. So I'm just going to run down the list. Okay.
Wait, so this investor call, this is just like open to the media for the world to know, or it was all leaked? Yes. Or tell me more. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Typically, investor calls, like, it's anybody who invests in Disney is welcome to be on the call. So that's anybody, right? That
cool.
owns.
Good point. Okay, cool.
So the first one was Moana 2 is coming out this year, right? First off, nobody really knew for sure this was getting made. They'd heard about it, but it's like in the can.
Yeah. The Rock, like, posted about it earlier today, actually. I didn't even remember to say that.
Right. Like, oh. So Thanksgiving, that's coming out. Disney bought the rights to stream Taylor Swift's Eras Tour movie, which is pretty big news for making money, right?
Yep. She's making everybody money right now.
Yeah, she's making money.
$300 million she's made the NFL this year directly. Mm-hmm. Just so everyone's aware. Continue. Mm-hmm. So it's a great investment.
Disney bought stake in Epic Games, which owns Fortnite. So that was kind of a big deal to see what they do with that.
They already have taken over the world.
Yeah, Disney already took over the
world. Jesus.
They renewed Percy Jackson, the Olympians, for season 2. That was pretty much going to come.
Have you watched that show, by the way?
Not yet. No.
We're talking a lot of WWE, but Edge... Adam Copeland is like the bad guy in that show. Oh, I never watched the other movies.
I've seen the movies, but I never read the book, so I don't know.
Quit trying to just zip through everything that's come out.
There's a lot.
There's questions to ask. I'm going to ask them.
Ask your questions. There's a lot.
I've asked the one that I want.
I don't
want
to take a 10-hour six to midnight.
Nah. Just pull one of my cards.
The 7th Alien movie is scheduled for release. Cool. Okay, it's going to be called Alien Romulus. I believe it's coming out this summer. But they officially put a title. Yeah, August 16th. It's done. It's like ready to go. We should see a trailer soon. August 16th. I knew it was getting made because it's being directed by Fede Alvarez, who did the Evil Dead remake back in 2012.
Oh, the good one.
Yeah, the good. Well, they're all good.
Call back.
Unless you're Kyle. No, but that's August 16th of this year, so that's good.
Fucking please be better than Prometheus and any of the last like three Alien movie franchises.
They took it away from Ridley Scott, so.
Well, I mean, did you see Napoleon?
Ugh, yeah. I actually had somebody text me today, like, hey, have you seen Napoleon? And I'm like, I did an episode on Napoleon. It's not good. Spoiler alert.
Here's an hour and 45 minutes of us talking about how fucking horrible it is.
Yeah, exactly. And then the last thing was like they released a bunch of announcements for 2025 and 2026. So here's the rundown. They're going to do Zootopia 2, which is going to come out Thanksgiving next year.
Great first movie.
It's fantastic. Zootopia. Toy Story 5 is coming out in 2026. Frozen 3 is coming out in 2026. The Mandalorian and Grogu movie will be coming out in 2026.
I saw that today, which I'm kind of like, what the fuck? You got to have the year to film and then the year to prep and release, but fuck, man, that's so far away. What about all the seasons of the shows we've been watching? We got to wait that long to wrap this thing up? Fuck. Sorry, it's like the Batman, like the new Batman's isn't coming out until forever too.
I know.
Hopefully I make it to that.
It's a lot of stuff. That's a lot. Disney announced a lot all at once. And obviously we know what's coming out, you know, this year. And we know like live action Moana is coming out next year. Cause they were making that.
Have they started filming that already?
Hell, I mean, I don't know. I didn't know they were making a sequel.
What happened to the Hellboy movie? We didn't know anything about that was coming out.
Right. That's that. Going on? Yeah, where's that at? I don't know. But anyway, that was all announced within like the last 24 hours. So that's a ton of Disney related news. But yeah, you know, the House of Mouse continues to grow bigger.
That's kind of shocking that they are, that they bought Epic Games. They're taking over Fortnite. That's.
Well, I know they already kind of had deals in place with Fortnite because they were, you know, like you could buy like Marvel skins. Like skins like that. Yeah. So that was already there, but they probably could buy the whole thing if they wanted to, but they bought a stake in it. So,
gosh, they are. Isn't there things in place to keep these monopolies from happening? Damn it.
Well,
anyways,
when you think about
a hold of DC.
As a corporation, right? Like, I mean, yeah, they bought Lucasfilm and they bought Marvel and they bought 20th Century Fox. And there was that rumor circulating that they wanted to buy Sony just so they could have Spider-Man back.
Well, I thought there was also, and this might have been a while ago, but at one point there was rumblings of them potentially buying DC as well. So, like, there was people talking about like, oh shit, if that happens, like then the whole, all of the comic book dome can combine and what's going to happen. I can't remember how long ago that was, but that was a conversation.
That would be something, wouldn't it? If Marvel and DC were owned by the same company and they could change the characters in and out as they wanted. Boy, that'd piss a lot of people off though.
It would. Well, in the 90s, they had those fucking horrible crossovers.
They only did it twice.
Like, it's like ever. Batman and Wolverine, I think, or Batman and Spider-Man.
No, they did full on crossovers. Like
yeah,
series.
I thought there was a lot of like one or two of one and then I can't remember. They were all freaking terrible art. So anyways, way off track.
I would feel like, boy, that would throw a wrench in the gears.
It would be too difficult. I would imagine they would probably keep them separate.
Yeah, they would have to. I don't think you could ever do a crossover. That would just cause way too much confusion.
Yeah, because then you had all the backstory and lore and would just be another multiverse in their own.
It's just then it gets more confusing. I saw this thing, and I know I'm kind of going off on a thing now, but it was somebody was. I don't remember what it was a podcast. I think it was like a clip of Joe Rogan's podcast, but, and it's an old clip, but it was, somebody was telling him like Thanos's origin or Thanos's like motivation in the comic book versus in the movies. Right. Like,
and how it's way better.
It's way better. Right. So, but think, okay, so it is way better, but I don't think that translates to film at all.
Yeah. It basically doesn't, he wanted to kill because he was in love with Lady Death.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. That doesn't translate to, you can't translate that to PG-13 movies.
For sure. And in a way that it would feel as grandiose as what that needed to be.
Yeah, you've got to get that to relate to the casual audience, you know?
Yep.
Because, yeah, those movies make $2 billion.
Yeah.
Because that many people go see the movies that never read a Marvel comic.
Yeah. I do. I wish there, like, maybe that they would have found a way to, like, have it as a part of it or, like, just maybe a little snippet of his backstory in the actual movies. But I don't know. There's just a little bit of something, like, because it's very sad. Like, he is in love with her. She is not in love with him, and he's trying to impress her, and he's like, I'll destroy the entire universe for you, which is cool. But in the movie world, yes, which I think they say in that clip too, where he kind of talks about like, doesn't really translate to a live action movie, but
I just don't think it would. And there's things like DC Marvel crossovers, I don't think that would ever translate well to the movies, because I think you just confuse too many people that
Tom Holland swinging into Robert Pattinson as he's beating up on.
We already got too many damn superheroes in there. Yeah. You know, they've already done that. So anyway, that was my sixth of a night for this week.
Love that. House of Mouse. Let's go.
House of Mouse. Nothing gets bigger. That takes us into our, I can't believe you. I can't believe you haven't seen it. For me, my first time viewing the 2000 animated adventure musical, The Road to El Dorado.
Love it.
Is there a song?
I am so happy we're
breaking into something. No.
El Dorado. I already did it earlier. I can't do it.
Yeah, I thought you were going to do it the whole thing. Anyway, The Road to El Dorado is, like I said, it came out in the year 2000. DreamWorks Pictures, so non-Disney animated. Mm-hmm. It's directed by Eric Bebo Bergeron. Right there. I don't know. Okay. And Don Paul in their directing debuts. They'd never directed any movies before this movie. Okay. Now, I thought this was interesting. So this movie was written by Ted Elliott and Terry Rossio, who are most famous as the duo who wrote all the Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
Oh.
Huh.
I can see that. I can see the correlation there.
But yeah, wrote all the Pirates of the Caribbean. They actually wrote Curse of the Black Pearl, like, shortly thereafter this movie came out. And then the cast is Kevin Kline stars as Tulio and Kenneth Branagh as Miguel, who are two main characters. We've got Rosie Perez as Chell, who's the heroine part of their con
very
in the movie.
Adult, like, love interest in the
you
movie.
You could say that. Edward James Olmos as the chief. Armand DeSante as Sekel Khan. Mm-hmm. And then Jim Cummings, the king of 90s and 2000s, like, animation voices, as Cortez. And then obviously the biggest thing about this movie is the music, composed by Hans Zimmer and John Powell, and songs by Elton John and Tim Rice, who really formed a duo back in 1994, the greatest year of movies, when they did the soundtrack to The Lion King.
Dude, I don't think I have thought as much about Armand DeSante than I have since we've been doing this pod. Like, we have stumbled upon him in so many random movies.
Indeed, we have.
It's just so random to me. So anyways.
Do you remember that part? We've talked about the Santa Claus a bunch of times during our Christmas movies. Mm-hmm. Do you remember when he first gets the list and he starts at the top and he goes, Armand DeSante?
Oh, I don't remember that. Oh,
yeah,
my
Tim
God.
Allen, that's the first thing he reads off the list. Yeah, funny.
Another random movie. But, like, that's interesting to me. I also recently, ever since we did our episode on where we were talking about Goodfellas and Martin Scorsese, I've been on this, like, mafia kick. Mm. And I watched, just probably 2 weeks ago, I watched Armand DeSante's. He did a Gotti movie where he plays John.
Yeah, oh,
Gotti,
yeah, he was John Gotti. That's right. That and was like an HBO movie. Oh yeah, that was like an HBO movie.
Really good. So it's free on YouTube, BT Dubs. Anyways, love that we saw this movie. You already gave a hint earlier. I don't know if we were on the pod or not when you'd said
we were
it,
not.
I'm heartbroken that this. Here's my thing. Before you say anything. We did not watch this movie together, and usually that's what we do when we do these. I can't believe you haven't seen it. And so I think that might have played a role in maybe your feelings, because there might have been moments where I would have been like, this is fucking hilarious, and maybe you would have picked up on it a little bit better. Hmm. Tell me your initial thoughts.
The animation's great, right? It looks fantastic. Very 2000s DreamWorks animation. Like, when DreamWorks with the hand-drawn animation in the 2000s was pretty good. Prince of Egypt looked amazing, right? Like, this is right along the lines with that. Obviously, the music's fantastic, right? Because you've got a Hans Zimmer score and you've got Elton John. I liked the
freaking, this pod almost lit on fire, as you just said. Hans Zimmer and Elton John creating music for the same thing.
Right. Well, they've done it before. It's crazy. But anyway.
Anyways.
I liked very much Kevin Kline and Kenneth Branagh as Tulio and Miguel in this movie. Thought they were great. They played off each other well. You felt like they knew each other, right? And, you know, like when voice recording's done, a lot of times people don't do it in the same room together. It's, you know, like one guy comes in one day, one guy comes in another day, and they record their stuff. I don't know how they did it, but it felt like they were actually doing the dialogue and stuff together. Yeah. I thought the story dragged on. You know, it was like they got to El Dorado pretty quick in the movie.
Yeah.
So why is it called the Road to El Dorado? They're there already.
Isn't that like a famous book or story or something?
Yeah, right. So, but then I don't know. I was waiting for more and it never came.
Giggity.
And anyway, so that was it. I don't know. It dragged on a little bit for me, more than I would have liked it to.
Did you have a gummy before you watched it?
No.
Damn it.
I watched it with my kids.
All right. Okay. Love that. Good for. Did they like it at least? Or were you like huffing and scoffing the whole time?
No. I didn't offer scoff the entire time. Dez liked it. Reagan was like me. She was like, meh.
So the movie for me, one, like the first part that you described, like the Miguel and Tulio. They are the only things about this movie that is why I love it so much. Mm-hmm. Like the story itself, basically. So Miguel and Tulio are two con artists that are best friends. One is blonde, one is brunette. But though they're best friends, they're so close, they feel more like brothers. Like they get mad at each other. And like you said, the actors and the characters themselves really feel like they know each other. This movie is like one of my best friends or my best friend growing up, Sean. Him and I like fucking love this movie just because we were Miguel and Tulio. So we always will quip these one-liners back. And really, I think that's why I like this movie so much, is not necessarily the story of like them going to El Dorado, blah, blah, blah. But just there's funny moments between the two of them. So there are these two con man artists. They somehow stumble upon a map to El Dorado, and they
basically win it in a dice game that they conned somebody out of. Now, this is funny. So the voice of the guy who had the map, who's like in the movie at the beginning, and then he's like on the boat, right, on Cortez's boat, is actually the voice of Tobin. It's Tobin Bell, who's like most famously known as Jigsaw from the Saw movies.
Oh, shoot. That's
that was funny.
Wild. I didn't even pick up on that. So the very beginning of the movie, when they're doing this dice game, and this is where you learn that they're con men, when they're conning people with loaded dice. It's probably the most memorable part of the movie because it has one of the most funniest lines in it.
100%. And I gotta say, like, I was set up for this to be an awesome movie because I liked the beginning so much. And then I felt like everything after they got to El Dorado was like, meh.
Yeah, because it's like when they're both con men doing con stuff, they're funny. Like they're doing loaded dice. They eventually it is figured out that they are cheating because they're winning a lot. And in the moment that they find out they're cheating, they have their own like con within a con where they then turn on each other, where one acts like he didn't realize the other one had loaded dice. He's like, you gave me loaded dice? And then they start fighting each other. And I've said it on another episode, but there's a line between them as they're sword fighting, basically slowly moving away from the group of guys who are trying to now attack them for cheating. They turn on each other. They're fighting. They're sword fighting. And one of them says, you fight like my sister. And then the other one says, I've fought your sister. That's a compliment. And I don't know why, but that fucking little back and forth dialogue is one of my favorite movie lines of all time. So they end up fighting each other. They get to a point where they can get away. And then they basically salute everyone and jump off the bridge or jump off the building and get away. So that really opens up to you. Okay, these are con men. They're kind of goofy. They're trying to make money, find ways to do it. They somehow, like I mentioned, in this game, they had won this map that I don't think they knew that it was El Dorado. Particularly, they just knew it was a map to treasure. They end up on a Spanish galleon that ends up getting them on like a small two-person boat that basically crashes and gets them onto the island. So it's really quick how they get to El Dorado or the island to do it.
But as soon as they get to the island, they realize, oh, hey, this map matches the landscape here.
Yes. So they're following the map and the landscape. There's Elton John music playing as they're making their way through. Eventually, they stumble upon El Dorado. And when they get to El Dorado, when they're discovered by the El Doradoans, they're both together riding a horse that like rears back, and at the moment that it happens, they are in front of this big giant stone wall that has two gods on, like a dragon or something, like an animal that's, it looks exactly like them. So they in turn think that these two are gods. And so when they get to El Dorado, basically the two are treated like gods. They're treated like kings because they are fulfilling a prophecy of these gods to coming back to their people. And so it's like Miguel and Tulio then go into like the ultimate con of like, all right, these people think that we're gods. We're going to pretend that we are. And basically to find a way so that they can steal the city of gold, or gold from the city of gold, which is what El Dorado is known for. So, I don't know. Like I said, the relationship between the two of them is just really funny. I think what you had said, kind of part of the story that becomes kind of a lull, is so they both go there because they both want to get rich, and then as they get to know people, they slowly start to kind of drift in different directions. One wants to still get rich, wants to steal the money. The other wants to play into living as this god and staying at El Dorado because he likes the people. And so that, like that part of the story, it's just like, yeah, but like I said,
hijinks ensue, right? Like, it's,
yes. So they're basically, the movie is them trying to keep their godhood like farce up, if that makes sense. Right.
And then you have the chief of the village, like the leader of the village, and then you have the high priest, who are kind of at odds, you can tell right from the beginning, right? Like the high priest thinks everybody needs sacrifice, humans are terrible. Yeah. And the chief is like, no, my people are good and my village is all good people, and we, you know. Yeah. And they, you know, and Miguel really plays into this, like, yeah, these people are awesome. We need to not sacrifice people, even though this nut job constantly wants to. And we need to treat them all with respect. And so that kind of plays into how the story moves on, which I liked that part. But, you know, it took a while, I think, to get there.
Yeah. I like that the El Doradoan people themselves is essentially like Mayans. It's very like based off like Mayan culture and people. And so I don't know why, but I find that also interesting because I don't feel like we get a lot of that in movies other than that one like live action Mel Gibson movie that he made, which I can't remember the name of it. Apocalypto.
Apocalypto. Yeah. Apocalypto. Yeah, so
that's like the only movie off the top of my head I can think of that really was about kind of Mayan cultures. Obviously this is El Dorado, not Mayans, but anyways, there's a really famous, I guess I would call it famous, but a scene from the movie that is very memorable where they play like the Mayan, like hoop ball game.
Yep.
Basically there's like a concrete circle on a wall, very high up on the wall, while there's like essentially just a flat like tennis court where they're running around, and you have to hit the ball with your hip up and through this hoop, and it's like 20 feet in the air. Miguel and Tulio are gods, so they are going to play like the El Doradoans, like top team
varsity.
Yeah, they're varsity squad. So there's like 12 of them. They look like NFL players. They're all massive and athletes. And Miguel and Tulio are like these tiny little dorks. Anyways, so they're trying to find ways of like, how are we going to win? How are we going to beat this? And then they find out that if the team loses, they're going to get sacrificed. So I can't remember which. So
basically what happens is Shell finds like the little armadillo character that's been following him around the whole thing, like turns into a ball and basically helps them win the game, essentially. Yes.
And then they're going to kill off the team and they find out. And that's when Tulio jumps in to try to save them, or Miguel. Yeah.
Miguel does, because Miguel's the one that's like all about saving people, right? Yes. He's like, yeah. Miguel's now we're done sacrificing people. We're not sacrificing any of these good people, blah, blah, blah. Then, you know, that's when the priest is like, but all the, you know, teachings say we need to sacrifice these people.
Yeah. So he's like constantly fighting against what they are saying is like, well, the prophecy or like the stories of the gods returning should go this way. And you guys are kind of going against it. Mm-hmm. Chell is kind of plays between both of them, doesn't necessarily play them against each other, but
right.
Tulio ends up like loving Chell, like likes her. There's a little bit of a love interest there. That's part of the movie that I thought I would not call this a kid's movie, or there's a moment that's very, that doesn't seem very child movie.
Yeah, Miguel walks in and on him getting all.
Yes. They're like getting close, lovey dovey, and then
heavy Miguel, petting.
Yes. And it's off screen, but Miguel walks in and she like pops up and her hair's all out of whack and literally like does like a mouth wipe. And Tulio gets up and he's like totally looks like he definitely
they were
just
smooching.
That's what they were insinuating. So anyway, super, that's the part of the movie I think is very adult. But I don't know what did you think of Armand Asante's character? Like
he's a nut job, right? And he's obviously the bad guy, but he basically like casts a spell and takes possession of a giant stone jaguar and comes after him. And then they end up killing the jaguar, right? He's a good bad guy, but again, it's just so, I don't know. It was kind of all over the place. That was where I was having my problems with the movie was that. Like, just, you're a god. Just tell him to, like, sacrifice him.
Yeah, sacrifice.
Just throw him off the, throw him off.
Yeah, because he was the main, he was that. Bad guy character is like the only thing that's driving, like, are you gods? And like, you should be doing the god stuff.
Yeah, everybody else bought into it. He's the only one who didn't.
Yes. And eventually, once we get to the end of the movie, you find out that the king or emperor or chief, he knows that they aren't really gods, but like, that they were good for the people and good.
And they were good to his people, especially Miguel. They were good to his people. And Miguel obviously had made it clear he wanted to stay to be an Eldoradian. Mm. And, you know, the chief was like, yeah, absolutely. Like, you're good to my people. They like you 100%. While Tulio and Chell wanted to take their riches and get out of town and go, you know, do other stuff, which, you know, whatever. Yeah. But, you know, she kind of drives that wedge between them. But they also have different goals, right? Like, it's not like she completely did, but, you know, they had different goals in the end and they wanted to do different things.
Yeah. And Chell is like the female version of them. She's a con artist in her own right. So there's a funny, the other really funny line from this movie is once they get to the point where they all are trying, they're trying to get away on their boat through like this underground cave thing. They're talking about how they're going to take out these pillars or how they're going to get away. And it's kind of a crazy idea. And Miguel is like, or no, Tulio, he's like, that's your plan, is it? And he says, yeah. Well, I like it. Like, it's just, I don't know if some little moment is still great for me. So anyways, I mean, I guess I've got some nostalgia goggles. Again, I wish we would watch it together. That's okay. I love this movie. It is, it's an animated flick that I enjoy and makes my heart happy. So,
I will say this. So, you know, they all end up leaving and blocking the city from being discovered because they want to protect the people. And Miguel doesn't get to stay, though he probably could have if he worked it out, but whatever. Anyway, so they save the city. And, you know, it's not like I said, it's not like I didn't dislike this movie. I felt like when I was watching it, though, I was kind of comparing it to another animated movie that came out the exact same year, which is The Emperor's New Groove. Like, and to me, that movie's hilarious. And but again,
yeah, I love that movie.
Yeah, I guess I don't know. It's the South American vibes or whatever. But I kind of was trying to compare the two at the same time, and I just thought that I thought the one was a lot funnier than the other. And again, I didn't see this in 2000 when it came out. I'm watching this for the first time as a 41-year-old, not as a, well, in 2000, I was 18. So, you know, as it was an adult either way. But I just, you know, it wasn't bad. The music was good. The characters were good. I just thought that there were some pacing issues and things like that. It wasn't like it was an instant classic. You know, I did look things up. It was a bomb at the box office. It had like a $95 million budget. It only made like $76 million when it came out. It kind of had a cult following after that. But the reviews were pretty mixed when it came out, too. It didn't have real good reviews. And it was, again, it was a lot of people were all over the place. Like, it's not a bad movie. There were some pacing issues, things like that with the reviews. And that's kind of how I felt with it. Again, it's not a bad movie. I would probably give it a 7.
Love that. All right. That's higher than I thought you were going to go.
It's 6.5.
There it is. That's be real here. It's a solid 8 for me. This is an 8 movie. Fair. This isn't a 9 where I'm like, fuck, like this is the best movie ever. But it isn't. It's a movie I enjoy. And I always laugh whenever it's on. So cool.
I'm glad I watched it. I don't know if I'd watch it again.
Okay, that's
I'm glad I've seen it
here. Okay, well, I appreciate that you did see it because we've kind of pushed that one off because it was like, is this one that like is this a movie we need to do or not?
Yeah, it felt like a filler, right? Like every time we couldn't think of one, it's like we're going to do The Road to El Dorado, and then it was like, well, we pushed it off 17 times. Let's just finally do it and get it off the list. So, but anyway, that's the 2000 animated adventure musical. The Road to El Dorado. And that takes us to my favorite segment.
There can be only 5. Only 5.
So I thought with the doing an animated movie, music, I wanted to do the top 5 animated movie soundtracks. Your top 5 animated movie soundtracks. So very specific. Yours is very specific tonight too. So, but anyway, top 5 animated movie soundtracks of all time. Starting off, no honorable mentions. I went straight with 5 on this one because I just thought that would be easier. Let's not get confused. Let's Number 5, up. I had The Little Mermaid.
Oh, did not see that making a top 5 list.
Oh, but. Yeah. Little Mermaid, because, and this one was mostly because of the songs, right? So it was Alan Menken did the score. Howard Ashman, who actually directed part of the movie, actually co-wrote most of the songs. This movie won Oscars for best score and best song.
Oh,
which
I'm not surprised. I didn't know that.
Disney did do a lot of that, like in the 90s and in late 80s and stuff too. But best song was Under the Sea. And that's kind of the why I had this on the list. Under the Sea, Kiss the Girl, Part of Your World. Like those are all classic Disney animated movie songs. So I felt like Little Mermaid kind of needed to be on here. Listen, when Disney was like pumping out, you know, masterpiece animated movies at the beginning of the 90s, late 80s. Like, this was the first one. Yeah. And then they just kept churning them out. But like, all of them had just killer soundtracks, especially for kids, right? Like,
yeah.
Which I was at the time, and then you were for the end part of that. But
funny way of saying that.
It is. Anyway, it's a funny way of saying I'm old.
It does have like banger after banger after banger. So
really does. Point. I felt like that one needed to be on there. Like, there's a couple other movies in the 90s that had a couple bangers and good scores, but I felt like this one, man, it had three pretty much rock solid songs. And Under the Sea was like, at the time, was like one of the biggest animated songs ever. Anyway, so Little Mermaid at number five. There's a lot of Disney on here. You probably figured that though.
Which was exactly why my list is what it was.
Non-Disney, right. This was gonna... So the only non-Disney one I have on my list at number four, How to Train Your Dragon. And this one's not about songs. This one's about the score. This was Oscar nominated. The composer was John Powell. And like, this soundtrack is epic. Mm. Like, the score for How to Train Your Dragon is amazing. Especially the song that's called Test Drive. Yeah. Which if you heard it, you would know what it is immediately. It's and like a ton of like Instagram and TikTok videos. Like, it is a song that is used. It's like, if you ever see the ones where it's like talking about like a real scenic part of nature and it kind of shows a globe and then it zooms in on it. It's always Test Drive is always the song. That's always the song that they play. Anyway. So How to Train Your Dragon is at number four.
Okay.
At number three, I had Nightmare Before Christmas.
Mm.
It's Danny Elfman.
Saw that coming from a mile away for you.
Danny Elfman, who's an awesome composer. He actually did the singing voice for Jack Skellington, too. I don't know if you know that or not.
I didn't know that.
He did. He did the singing voice.
I didn't look up as much. Like, you got a lot of like nuggets of information of
I already knew that. Well, you know, I just went in and wrote some stuff down. But anyway, Nightmare Before Christmas, this was one too. And like a lot of these kind of have to do with my kids too. This was one, like, we own the soundtrack. We listen to it all the time. Like, This Is Halloween gets played. Like, that's like a Halloween anthem in this house anymore. Right. Like, Nightmare Before Christmas is great soundtrack. It's spooky. It's moody, but at the same time, like, it's really spooky. It's got really good songs in it too. So I had that at number three. At number two, I had Frozen.
Oh, I'm shocked. This list is, it's just not where I thought it was going to go. Yeah, not fair. In a bad way, but.
Yeah. I've Frozen at number two. Again, like, this was something my daughter, when she was little, like, we listened to it all the time. We would sing the songs in the car, things like that. Christoph Beck's the composer. The songs were written by Robert Lopez and Kristen Anderson Lopez. They did win an Oscar for Best Song for Let It Go.
Let It Go, of course.
Obviously, which was a huge, massive hit when it came out. And then, you know, the whole soundtrack's good. All the songs are good. And like, when you see the movie, like, it really captures that like Scandinavian vibe with the song at the beginning and the way the score plays. So, yeah, I had that at number two. And then at number one, I think this is the easiest decision for me ever on any of these top five lists. For me, personally, you might have something different. Number one's The Lion King. It's Hans Zimmer did the score. It's Elton John and Tim Rice. This is where it started, right? It won the Oscar for Best Score. It won the Oscar for Best Song for Can You Feel the Love Tonight? Circle of Life and Can You Feel the Love Tonight? Both versions. There was the movie versions of both songs. Mm-hmm. Then there was the Elton John versions of both songs. Mm-hmm. Right? Amazing. Right? They were amazing.
Yes.
Soundtrack won three Grammy Awards. Best movie score. Best movie song. That. And Elton John won a Grammy for Best Male Pop Vocalist that year for the fucking Lion King.
Get out.
And Elton, you know, you think about, I know, Elton John's, he's a man. The opening scene of that movie with the song and the sun rising and all the animals and stuff. And then you get the boom, right? Like,
oh dude, it's one of the best opening scenes to like a movie ever. It's like top 15 for sure.
100%.
Yeah, I love that.
I got to say, so this is funny. Like when this movie came out, I was 12, right? It's one of my favorite movies of all time. I will say that. The Lion
love
King.
Love it.
I remember when I got my first CD player when I was 12. I got, I remember what my first three CDs that I ever got were Meatloaf's Bat Out of Hell 2, Aerosmith's Get a Grip, and the soundtrack to The Lion King.
And you listen to The Lion King more than any of those.
Yes.
That's fucking great.
I could listen to just Hans Zimmer's score to that movie. Like, just listen to it.
Truthfully.
As a kid, I could.
Literally Hans Zimmer. I have probably more Hans Zimmer like movie soundtrack songs or scores on my playlist than like anyone. Like he has so many good songs.
I can't remember. If we've talked about this before or not, I can't remember if you and I've had this conversation, but I want to say we have. But it's funny when you think about like when it comes to movie composers, Hans Zimmer is probably the best composer when it comes to movie scores as a whole. And then there's John Williams, who's like the theme guy, right? Like,
yes. Yep.
But I wouldn't put one above the other. Does that make sense? Like,
yes.
Because we all know what John Williams has done. Like he's done like almost every iconic theme and score ever.
His scores that he created for these movies are like the calling card for the movie. Like you could have your eyes closed and hear the song and you immediately know what franchise it is because of John Williams. Hans Zimmer, I think, obviously his stuff is way more modern and more recent, but I agree. His scores are more, they have made movies way more epic just because of him and what he's done, then I think maybe the movie would have been without him. So, but I'm with that. Love that. Lion King number one, huh? Love it. Did you have anything else that you wanted
to? No, that's it. Carry on.
Cool. No, it's great. I like your list and it's very different than mine. Not very different, but we have some different. I think you're going to tell the age difference here.
Oh, are we now?
Because like I clearly went with the ones that were in my time frame and maybe you didn't like them as much because you're a little bit older maybe. But to start things out, at number five, I had The Lion King. Because like everything you said, it's such an iconic movie and the score and everything is incredible. I love that movie a lot too. Maybe not best favorite movie of all, one of my favorites of all time, like you had mentioned, but it is one of my favorite cartoon movies that I like had my kids watch the second that they're able to watch movies. So, okay. Lion King, number five. Number four, I had Mulan because there's so many songs in this movie.
It was this close to taking Little Mermaid's spot.
I love that. Mulan is a badass movie. It is a great badass movie. We are men. Like, it's just,
down to business.
It's so good.
You know who sings that?
I have no idea. The guy,
Donny Osmond. It's Donny Osmond.
Fascinating.
Is the singing voice for that. Yeah.
I had no idea. I truly thought it was the actor.
It is not.
That was doing the main character. That's amazing. Mulan has some great memorable jams that I think is what made that movie what it was because the songs were so good. So and that's my number four. My number three, I had Aladdin. Another just classic Disney movie that had every song from that movie is a very memorable, like instant classic, I would say. You also get Robin Williams singing. He actually does the opening, Arabian Nights. And it's his Arabian Nights.
Like Me.
So good. Yeah, Friend Like Me is the genie. There's A Whole New World. It's just another classic. It's such a good movie that, again, though I think it's memorable for more than just the score. I think the score and those songs, the soundtrack itself, just made that movie. It really took it from a home run to a grand slam. That's my number three. Number two, I said number one because I switched these around two different times of which ones I wanted to be number one, number two. And I ended on my number two cartoon or animated movie score of all time, Tarzan. This movie score is so good.
Yeah.
Phil Collins just... I know Elton John really crushes it on a lot of these, but Phil Collins hit some awesome home runs with this movie. You'll Be in My Heart. Ugh. When I found out I was having a son and we were getting close to being born, that song played so much on my playlist. It makes me think of my boys. And I just love it. There's also some really fun songs in there, like Strangers Like Me, Two Worlds.
It's
kind of
funny. I got to say this to my sister, Mary, who, you know, my sister, Mary. So she's in her mid late 20s. Right. So Tarzan was right for her. Right. Right around her time frame. She texted me or sent me something one time and it was like, Phil Collins didn't have to go that hard for Tarzan, but he did it, and he did it for us.
I was just going to say, and we are all thankful for it.
Yeah, he did it. He did that for us.
Hell yeah, Mary. You get it. That's awesome. And it's true.
It's 100% true.
He made this movie so good. Like I said, there's a ton of fun songs. I did not look up the name, but the one where they're playing instruments with all the stuff. It's so good. Strangers Like Me, obviously, is a big kind of anthem, too. So, that's my number two. And my number one animated movie score of all time, A Goofy Movie. I said it. A Goofy Movie.
Powerline. I didn't even think of A Goofy Movie.
Powerline single-handedly made this movie amazing.
Little Mermaid's off my list. Goofy movie's on it.
You're bringing Powerline.
I have to.
Stand out above the crowd, even if I got a shout out.
Those two songs are so amazing.
Dude, and that opening scene where he is playing Powerline on stage, I don't remember what age I was at the time that movie came out, but it perfectly it made me I wanted to be Powerline because of that opening scene. It was just so cool. He was cool. He was like Michael Jackson meets freaking another superstar. I can't think of a name of, but man, I love that movie strictly because the opening song and then also the ending song, One to One, is the other one where they're on the stage. Is Eye to Eye? Fucking
Eye
One
to
One. Oh my God, I'm so embarrassed. Cut that out.
Letter I.
Cut that out. I. Gonna see how do I? And they're fucking doing the perfect cast.
Perfect cast. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so upset that I said One to One. I'm so embarrassed by that.
It's okay.
But incredible. There's also I don't think I wrote it down, but there's the song that plays after he gets in trouble at the beginning and he's like,
yeah, the school's out one when he's like,
where he's running, jumping over fences and doing some crazy stuff.
I just think about it.
That's my number one. Again, I had Tarzan at number one for a little bit, but I flipped him because
when we did football movies, greatest football movies of all time, and I said Rudy, and you were mad you forgot Rudy. How mad I am now that I forgot a Goofy movie, like that I didn't even think about it. Like I will put a Goofy movie at number two right now behind The Lion King. That's where I would put it. I'm mad now.
That's great. I honestly, when I was going through it, I was almost done with my list. I think I did have one more, and I was putting Tarzan down, and then I was like, oh, shit. Fucking Goofy movie. Because it's not like when you think of movie scores, like
you don't think of the score at all with a Goofy movie.
Yeah,
you think of those songs.
Yes. Well, and I'm thinking more of like when we're talking about like what's the best movie soundtrack for cartoons, you think of the classics, The Little Mermaids, The Lion Kings, uh-huh. The Aladdins. Uh-huh. And so when it crossed my mind of like, oh, Powerline is the best fucking music from a cartoon, I was God. I got to put that at two. And then I'm like, I'm putting that at one because those are so good. So anyways, that's my list. I like Amazing. That we had very different lists, but also I feel like we were very much agreed for both of them. So
yeah, like I considered Mulan for the longest time because of how much, especially the one song I really like. But that also didn't like Reflection from Christina Aguilera come out of that song, that movie soundtrack too? Do you think it did? Like that came from Mulan.
Yeah. Yes, it did. Yeah. Yes, it did.
So like the stuff you had on your list, I easily could have put on my list, like hands down. I would have had no problem. I had no problem with any of your choices whatsoever.
I was going to say honorable mention was Road to El Dorado, but because you didn't like the movie at all, I'm like, I'm not going to say that. So here we are.
I'm not going to yuck your yum, man. If you want to put Road to El Dorado on there.
Wait, but like, that's a t-shirt that we need to have made.
Don't yuck my yum. All right, that's top five animated movie soundtracks. What do you got?
Okay. This one, Howie hated doing because he wanted to do certain other movies.
It was oddly specific.
It was oddly specific, but also not specific enough. Like, I did top five cartoon movies that are not Disney.
Hand animated, like drawn.
Yes.
Yes.
Maybe I wasn't reading into exactly what you meant by hand drawn. I was more just saying cartoon. It can't be a Toy Story. It can't be 3D. It can't be Shrek. Like, we need cartoons. Yeah. We know what cartoon movies are.
Okay.
And so maybe our lists are way different, but like I had sent over like five different variations of that, and this is the one I think we ended up on. So anyways, I'm excited about this list because when I was writing it down, everything worked out because of the soundtrack list that you did. I was like, if we do a top five animated movies of all time, we're going to put all of those movies from the soundtrack list on it. You're going to get those Disney classics.
I had no problem with it being non-Disney, but when you said it had to be cartoon, I mean, like that eliminates Shrek and Kung Fu Panda and eliminates all the stop motion movies and things like that. And that's where I was like, there's so many, How to Train Your Dragon. So many of those I would have had probably on there. I mean, I did okay with the list, but
I just wanted to stay on
my list would have totally changed.
I wanted to stay on the Road to El Dorado, like classic cartoon vibe. So, okay. I am going to start. I'm going to rifle off some honorable mentions because my mom would kill me if I didn't say a couple of these or one of them at least. Honorable mention, Road to El Dorado. I'm not going to put it on my list because we did a whole episode about it. The Prince of Egypt, honorable mention. Batman Under the Red Hood, honorable mention. Okay, top five animated / cartoon movies that are not Disney of all time. Number five, there's a tie between two. Once Upon a Forest, which I would bet you probably don't even know what that movie is.
I have no idea what that is.
it's a movie about like people are come, humans come and are basically destroying a habitat where these
ferngullies that are,
it is very similar in that tone, but they basically they go on a journey to try to save one of their friends because they get put in a coma due to like chemicals from humans. But anyways, it was a classic movie that we watched in my house a lot. It is the number one movie that in my life, I'm like, I will bring up of like, oh, do you remember that one movie that had all of this? And I'll never remember the name to it. And so finally I have burned it in my brain. Once Upon a Forest. It's fucking amazing. And I had that tied with Rockadoodle. Probably another movie that you have no idea what I'm talking about.
I know what
about,
that is. Glenn Campbell was the rooster.
Yes, it is. I mean, it's primarily animated. Rockadoodle. Yes, you do know it. Yes. Great freaking movie. It's primarily animated. There's a little bit of live action at the beginning. Animated. They get turned into cartoons. And it's the music is great. We watched it a ton in my house. There's it's again, that was a movie that we grew up on. So tied at number five, Once Upon a Forest and Rockadoodle. Number four, An American Tale, Feifel Goes West. This movie, I will say the first one is good too, but this movie was way better than the first. It's Feifel is a little mouse and his family are basically like immigrants. In the first movie, they live in New York and they've migrated there. And then in this movie, they're going west. It's like this funny Western, like there's an old dog that's Wyatt Earp. Feifel is like basically like becomes a like mini cowboy. There's a ton of funny moments in it. It's I can't think of the name of it's not John Candy. It's there's the cat has a very memorable voice.
Is it Dom DeLuise?
That's a great question.
I'm gonna look it up.
It was very Robin Williams, like genie, like he was just hilarious. The bad guy feels he's like a aristocratic cat who's masquerading as saving everybody, but really he's like a dastardly, curled mustachioed bad guy. Kind of reminds me of like a cartoon cat version of Daniel Day-Lewis. It's just such a fucking cool movie. My kids actually really like it.
It was Dom DeLuise.
There it is. That's why I have you. You're the man in the chair for me. But yeah, American Tale. Feifel Goes West. I freaking love the Feifel movies. Number three. You already mentioned this earlier. Ferngully. Ferngully is a fucking badass movie. We watched a ton in my house. It is one of the most underrated Robin Williams roles ever. And his stuff in that movie is fucking hilarious. Him as Batty, he plays a bat that's been like, he's been like human tested for like, he's been experimented on. He's got like a little electricity cork going. Ferngully is a fairy that lives in a forest that humans are taking, they're chopping down the forest. And one of the guys who is part of the chopping down, the construction guys, he gets shrunk down and becomes a tiny little, basically the size of the fairy. So
yeah,
it's actually a like really cool movie. The animation's really cool. There's actually some really good music to it. So anyways, Ferngully, we love it in my house.
You got to talk about the villain.
Also a villain, most like another, I would say his most underrated movie is Mr. It himself. And as I say that now, Tim fucking Curry. I am so bad with names today. Tim Curry plays like
the baby.
Yeah. Tim Curry. What? Damn it. I'm going to get roasted on TikTok. Tim Curry plays like the sludge, like toxic monster, toxic sludge.
Yeah, he's called Hexus. Hexus.
Yes. Yeah, and he Hex. There's a lot of that in there. Yeah. He has a really iconic song in that too. That I think it's literally called Toxic Love, but it's like nobody talks about that as a Tim Curry movie. No. And nobody talks about that as a Robin Williams movie, but both of them are so good that it makes that movie an instant classic in my household. So, all right, number two, this movie is...
Okay, I got to say this real quick. This is crazy to me. Oh, so I'm looking at the soundtrack to Ferngully, okay? So it is called Toxic Love. Mm-hmm. Most of the songs for Ferngully were written by Thomas Dolby. Have you ever heard that song by Thomas Dolby? She Blinded Me with Science. Have you ever heard that? Like,
oh, yeah.
Shitty 80s. Anyway, he wrote most of the songs. And then, anyway, just saw that and I was like, that's random.
Love that.
Weird.
Love that. Ferngully. That's a movie that I feel like, I want to say it's underrated or not a lot of people know about it, but I think it's actually more popular than maybe I think it is or should be. I think it's a great movie. Number two, I've got The Iron Giant. This cartoon movie is fucking cool. Basically, a giant robot crashes and ends up in this small, like, mountain town. A boy stumbles upon this giant robot and befriends him, and they basically become best friends. The robot has a big dent in his head, so he doesn't remember who he is or how he got there or why. And the kid doesn't have a dad. He's lonely, doesn't have a lot of friends, and him and this robot become besties. And the kid's a big comic book nerd, so he teaches the giant a lot about Superman. And so there's a lot of cool moments where the robot thinks he's Superman. You end up finding out at the end that he is like actually an alien robot that was sent to basically like destroy the world or go to war with humans. And because of his friendship with the boy, he ends up basically turning him back to being good so he doesn't attack. But the setting of it is really cool. It's like 1950s, 1940s or something like that. It's a ton of fun. The animation's great. The voice acting is awesome. It's a really cool story. I love that movie growing up.
It's deep.
Yeah, there are some like... Exactly. There's some really funny moments, very lighthearted. Mm-hmm. Like when he's trying to get the giant to go swimming in the lake and the giant like jumps in with a cannonball and like it basically creates a tidal wave and puts the kid on like the top of a tree. And the guy in the movie who's good friends with them too, like he's sitting in a chair that rolls around with the wave and slowly gets placed in his chair on the road. But yeah, it gets serious at the end. Mm-hmm. It's really sad, but also like cool. Basically like it gives you that old 1930s, 40s, like monster movie vibe or like alien invasion movie vibe, just with all the armies like attacking.
Right. And
stuff. But anyways, cool movie, Iron Giant. If you haven't watched that in a long time, this is your reminder to go watch it because it's so good.
Mm-hmm.
And then number one, it is the best animated movie of all time. I watch this multiple times a year, and mm-hmm. it goes in line with something I talked about earlier in the day that I said I need to stop talking about. Batman, The Mask of the Phantasm.
Nice.
This movie is freaking amazing. It is it's from the Batman animated series universe, but it's a story where you learn about kind of Batman's origin a little bit. You also get his first love interest. You get a little bit more of why he ended up becoming Batman early on in his career, but also like the score for this movie was way more epic than it should have been. Like, I don't know how long ago it has been since you've watched that movie, but like the score in that movie is so, it's iconic. And I like, it's one of those movies that I could hear the score and immediately know what movie we're talking about and what point in the movie it is. So it's a great Batman versus Joker story.
Batman movie. Like
it, it is oftentimes talked about as the best Batman movie ever. And that includes live action. And it's usually always in people's top five because it's so good. It was
in both of ours when we did best Batman movies. Yeah.
So Batman, Mask of the Phantasm, my number one top animated cartoon movie that's not Disney.
Nice. What'd I you like think? Your list. We have two similarities. All right.
Bring it on.
Some of mine. Hand-drawn animated movies not made by Disney. At number five, I have The Hobbit.
Oh, nice.
Which love is, that. I loved that movie growing up. It's terrifying. The animation set. Yeah, it's Rankin and Bass, who did like, they did a bunch of stuff, but they did like the original Ninja Turtles animated series at the beginning. And you can see that in the early animation for that series. They have that very round shapes with the animation, which is kind of what the Hobbit movie had. It's not exactly like the book because they're basically taking this super long book and they're putting it in like an hour and 20 minute movie. Yeah. But it hits the highlights very well. The goblins are terrifying. The spiders are terrifying. Like it's Smaug's terrifying. Like as a little kid watching that, you are freaked the fuck out. Even the trolls are, you know, it's a wild movie, but the voice cast is great. The animation's cool. It's from the 70s. So, I mean, like it's old, but it's a cool movie. Like, so I had Hobbit. Cool. I had Hobbit at number five.
I would compare the scariness of that to like the movie Secrets of the Nim. Like,
oh, I almost had that on movie. My Secret of Nim. It's a
scary fucking movie.
It's terrifying. Yeah. At number four, I had Princess Mononoke.
Oh,
which is an anime movie, right? Yep. I got some, like, remember I had like a roommate or something that kind of got me turned on to this movie and I was like, anime, whatever. But it's a very good, it's a very well done movie. The voice cast is tremendous because I think this came out like early 2000s, late 90s. So I think it's like Billy Bob Thornton, Claire Danes, like it's huge voice cast. It's
not know that.
Super well done. The animation's incredible and it's got great action set pieces and it's very emotional. Like a lot of those, anime movies that kind of came out at that time and that were, and obviously it's non-Disney, but you know, Princess Mononoke I had at number four. At number three, I had The Iron Giant for all the reasons that you said. The Iron Giant is probably one of the best animated movies not made by Disney during that time frame. That is hand-drawn, you know, to be specific. Mm-hmm. It could easily be a number one on a list. It's that good. Right. Yep. The Iron Giant's a classic. I haven't seen it in a very long time. I really would like to see it again. I know my kids have never seen it. So I think it's something I'd like to show to Dez. Yeah. So I had The Iron Giant at number three. And number two, I had Klaus.
Oh, at number two. Dumbass Kyle. How did I miss Klaus? Ugh.
Yeah. I had Klaus at number two, which we covered on our Santa Claus movies during Christmas. It's one of the best Christmas movies you can watch. It's definitely the best animated Christmas movie.
Highly
recommend it on Netflix for Christmas season next year. If you've never seen it, Klaus is it was an instant classic. Talk about a voice cast too. It's amazing.
Incredible.
But the animation style, it's hand drawn, but it looks incredible. Like
I can't believe I left it off my list. I'm such a fool.
It's an amazing movie. So Klaus, I have it number two. Nice. And then number one, I have Batman Mask of the Phantasm.
Let's go.
Yeah.
Number one.
That was an easy choice to make.
Crushing it.
You know, DC, I thought about putting some other DC animated movies on my list. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, DC makes some good animated movies. Don't get me wrong. We've talked about that before. There's some good. Yep. I thought about putting Flashpoint Paradox on here because I really liked the way they made that one. That was really good. I liked the Justice League Dark movies as well. Yep. I thought those were really good.
Yep.
But I didn't want it to be just DC animated movies. And really, when it comes to it, like those other movies that are on my list are probably better than those.
Mm-hmm.
Except for this one.
Facts. Yes.
Because it, and it's like when you think about Batman movies all time, right? Like this is in the conversation with the Nolan movies. Like it's definitely better than Dark Knight Rises to me. And it's up there with like Batman Returns in 89. And it's in the conversation for sure.
For sure. It's so good. It is so,
so good. And I really need to probably watch it again. And I don't think I own it on Blu-ray. I think I just have it on DVD. So I might have to rectify that.
I just watched it not too long ago with the boys because we've been watching Batman the Animated Series. And they really like the Phantasm. That character is really cool.
Yes.
Later on, they actually brought her back and she's now part of comic continuity. So, cool twist on a villain that you know at the end. So it is an instant classic. And the story of how they wrote it and how short of a time they wrote it in and made it is just even crazier. So love that. Look at us with our number ones.
Look at
us. Such a specific but also could be anything. We had the same number one. I love that. That's
I thought we would.
When you said The Hobbit at one point, I thought, oh, he might have the Lord of the Rings on here at some point. So, but when you said The Hobbit, I was like, oh, The Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings are all fucking terrifying. They're scary fucking movies.
The Hobbit they made, and then they made the Lord of the Rings anime, and these were done by Warner Brothers. Then the Lord of the Rings animated movie is terrible animation. It's awful. Like it was one of those things where they like filmed real people and they like drew over it. And so there's a scene where Aragorn I don't know what Aragorn's supposed to look like. He looks like Geronimo in this movie. Like I don't know. He's wearing like a brown loincloth and he's got super dark complexion with long black hair. It just looks, it's not the way I imagined it. Anyway, there's a scene where in the animation, he trips and falls on a stick. And that's because the dude really fell. And they just stuck with it and animated. He wasn't supposed to fall. But it's and then they made Return of the King. They made an animated movie for Return of the King. And they went back to the Rankin and Bass animation style for that one.
Yeah. So it was like much better.
I'll watch The Hobbit and then I'll watch Return of the King and fuck the middle. Like, cause it ain't right.
There's a funny someone's clipped it from that movie and they play it on as like a gif all the time. But there's a moment where Gandalf like is talking to Samwise Gamgee. He looks at him and then he leans in and does like a little like,
oh yeah.
Like a, and it's so weird. Random, but it's hilarious.
The Balrog literally looks like a guy with a black sheet over him. Like, cause I think that's what it was. It's bad. The animation's bad on that movie.
Yeah. Love that. I wanted I originally had meant to have it on my list and then an honorable mention, but like Titan AE was another one that I really liked, which I don't think folks, when it came out, I don't think it was well received, but then had more of a cult following after, great voice acting in it. But and then I think these lists could be like drastically different if we were able to add some Disney in there. So,
well, if it was Disney, it'd be drastically different. And then if it was just non-Disney animated movies, it would be drastically different too, because I know I'd have at least one or two Laika movies in here for sure. Because they're such good quality.
That's why I just wanted to talk about like three or four of these very particular movies. So that's why my list was very particular. So,
Well, and that's why when you were like, oh, I see what you're saying. Like, maybe we can change it. I'm like, no, man, I made my list. Like, well, let's go. Stick with it. Already set. I don't want to change it again. But I liked your list. It's good. We had a couple similarities that was good. I liked your soundtracks. Thought that was a better discussion than I really thought it was going to be when we Yeah. When you started naming them, I'm like, oh, God damn, I can't believe I forgot that. But, anyway, that takes us to the end of episode number 36 of the Movie Dads podcast, the 2000 animated Road to El Dorado. If you're watching us on YouTube, click that like and subscribe. Click that bell. Make sure you subscribe. Leave us comments. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you don't like. If you're not watching us on YouTube, hopefully you're watching or listening to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, or Podcast Index. You can see some of our short clips and videos on social media at Movie Dads Pod on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. We will be back next week with the new Sony superhero movie, Madam Web.
Madam Web. Madam Web.
We're not super Jones for this movie. We had this discussion. DC doesn't have anything coming out this year. Mm-hmm. Marvel's got Deadpool, and that's it. So mm-hmm. Sony is capitalizing on the superhero market in 2024 and releasing Madam Web and Kraven the Hunter and Venom 3. And I think there's and Spider-Verse, Beyond the Spider-Verse, supposed to come out this year too. Yep. Sony's got the market cornered with these Spider movies, but it starts with Madam Web. I want to see how it ties in, where it ties in, who it ties into, because obviously it could tie into Tobey Maguire, Andrew Garfield, Tom Holland. Could take place in the early 2000s. We talked about, why is Madam Web not an old lady? Maybe that's why. Maybe it's because this movie took place 20 some years ago and she's now in her late 50s. I don't know. We're going to find out. But I don't think it looks great.
I was going to say the trailer.
But we're going to go in with an open mind.
It's going to be great. It'll be a cool Spider-Man movie. It'll be a cool Spider-Man movie.
Spider-Person movie. Episode 37. Next week, Madam Web. We will see you then.
Bye.
Bye.